It's news to Nellie. Was Nellie Bly a woman ahead of her time, or was she just trapped in a society when women were less than second-class citizens? In 1885, the Pittsburgh Dispatch ran a column called What Girls Are Good For. It argued that women should not vote or work, but make their home a little paradise and play the part of an angel. One of the readers was a 20-year-old girl who knew firsthand the dangers of being dependent on a man. Born 13th out of 15 children in a small Pennsylvania town, she'd quit school and moved to Pittsburgh at 16 to get away from an abusive stepfather. Because there weren't a lot of job options for young women then, she'd been working at a series of low-paying jobs. The column's unrealistic view so outraged her that she wrote an angry anonymous letter to the editor signed Lonely Orphan Girl. The editor was so impressed by her letter that he advertised in the Sunday Classifieds looking for her. When she showed up at the paper, he offered her a job. She wrote two stories for the paper as the Lonely Orphan Girl, The Girl Puzzle, about the difficulties of poor working girls, and Mad Marriage, calling for the reform of Pennsylvania's divorce laws. She was hired. In those days, it was unseemly for women writers to use their real names, so Elizabeth Cochran took the name Nellie Bly from a Stephen Foster song. Nellie wanted to expose unsafe working conditions in the sweatshops and write about the poor. However, a lot of the businesses Nellie wrote about also advertised in the paper, and they complained about her reports and threatened to withdraw their advertising. Her editor wanted her to concentrate on flower shows and other fluff pieces, but instead, Nellie went to Mexico to write about the plight of the poor and government corruption there. When the Mexican government realized what she was up to, she was ordered out of the country. Her articles later became a book, 6 Months in Mexico. One day, Nellie left a note for her editors that said, "I am off for New York. Look out for me. Bly." She moved to New York City thinking that she could easily get a job with Joseph Pulitzer's New York World, but she couldn't even get an interview. After 4 months, she still hadn't found a job and she'd run out of money. In desperation, she talked her way past the guards at the New York World and into the office of the managing editor. She so impressed him that he gave her a $25 retainer until she could be hired. Her first assignment was to get herself committed to a women's insane asylum. Her journal of that experience exposed the horrific conditions at the asylum and the cruelty and abuse of patients by the staff. She also noted that many of the people being held there weren't even crazy, like women whose husbands had them committed just to get rid of them, and women whose only mental problem was that they didn't speak English. She called the place a human rat trap. It was easy to get in, but once there, it is impossible to get out. Nellie was fortunate enough to have a boss who came to get her after 10 days. Her book, 10 Days in a Madhouse, made her famous and prompted much-needed reforms. And because she was very pretty, worked in a male-dominated industry, and took huge risks, she was popular with readers. The newspaper gave her her own byline, something previously unheard of for a newspaper woman, and in a time when few men were accorded the honor. After her trip to the asylum, she went undercover as a chorus girl, a maid, and an unwed mother. To get the story on poor treatment of women prisoners, she even got herself arrested for theft. Meanwhile, her editors dreamed up another publicity stunt to boost circulation, but they wanted one of their male reporters to do it because a woman would need an escort. The idea was to see if someone could travel around the world in less than the 80 days it took Phileas Fogg, the character in Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days. Nellie insisted that she could beat whoever they sent, and that she'd do it for another newspaper, if necessary. She got the assignment. Unescorted, she traveled by steamship, rail, horse, and rickshaw with only a small satchel and a checked coat that would become her trademark. Her articles created a sensation. Readers couldn't wait to get their hands on the next installment. Nellie arrived back in New York 72 days later, beating Phileas Fogg's fictional time by more than a week. She soon realized how much the newspaper had profited from her reporting. Disappointed that her editors didn't give her a raise, thank her, or otherwise acknowledge her contributions, she resigned. In 1895, Bly married 70-year-old millionaire Robert L. Seaman, probably more as an investment than for love. He was 40 years her senior and died soon after their marriage. Nellie took over his manufacturing business and instituted reforms to help the workers. She added unheard-of benefits, such as paid health care, a gymnasium, and a library. The business prospered, but the accounting staff was busy embezzling most of the profits, so the company was forced into bankruptcy in 1910. Nellie went to Europe for a long vacation, long enough to be there at the start of World War I. She became, what else, the first female war correspondent, and her reporting from the front provided a vivid look at the war's cost in human terms. She spent 4 years reporting in Europe, and upon her return home, she went to work for the New York Evening Journal, writing an advice column. The one-time lonely orphan girl also did a lot of charitable work for the city's poor, focusing on helping unwed mothers and abandoned children. She died of pneumonia in 1922 at the age of 55. Newspapers around the world carried her obituary, and the New York World wrote, "Nellie Bly was the best reporter in America."